Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm going to pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Welcome back, second half of the Tom Abraham Show here on a Thursday, a throwback Thursday in the doghouse. Guns N' Roses today, that's right. It was back in 1991 when GNR released two albums, Use Your Illusion 1 and Use Your Illusion 2. They debuted at number 1 and number 2 in the UK. Both albums also made it to number 1 and number 2 in the US. So enjoy your GNR today. We'll have that for you throughout the show. Joining us now, a guy who might be a little bit busy with the news that's been floating around, certainly in the last couple of days. He's the managing producer of programming for AL.com. He's Matt Scalise. Matt, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. I might crank some GNR on the way home just to get this out of my system. It's been that kind of week.
Oh, my God. Can't somebody there at AL.com, can't you guys send a memo to the FBI and say, look, we're in the midst of the football season. We got enough stuff to do. Can't you do this? This is an off-season story. Don't hit us with this right before basketball practice and right in the middle of the football season. We got enough to cover.
This is the most, I can guarantee you, this is the most we've had people reading college basketball coverage on AL.com in September since we've been measuring statistics on the website.
How does it work when you hit refresh? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm hitting refresh about every 10 minutes here during the show and all day long at AL.com. Does that like go as another hit? Because I'm just waiting to see the next shoe to drop. I'm waiting to see what happens next, and I'm waiting for your next story. I'm waiting for that little red thing across the top, breaking news, you know, that something else has happened.
I mean, we've kind of gone home every night this week just fully aware that we may need to jump into action, and fortunately, with the way things work today, we can actually – you know, we can do a lot of what we do from home. We can even make video from home these days,
yeah,
with kind of a home studio set up. But it's definitely been the most intrigue that we've had around college basketball in this state since I've been covering it. And I think that, you know, it's not entirely a coincidence that the year that these two programs that have historically not been elite programs. I know people will say that Alabama's had some more success, I guess, historically than Auburn, but neither one of these are blue blood programs. They're finally bringing in, you know, top 10 recruiting classes. There's hype building around these programs, and then something like this happens. You know, I think probably this is the result of pressure to do more with these programs, the pressure of hiring highly paid, well-known coaches at these programs. I'm not saying this is suggestive of any kind of widespread cheating, because we certainly don't have evidence of that so far beyond what's happened here. But you can tell that the fact that bigger names have suddenly become attracted to Alabama and Auburn basketball, it also attracts other things. It attracts the attention of agents and the sketchier side of this business to those programs as well, unfortunately.
Well, and let's be clear for those that, you know, jump in and out of the show. This isn't something where the FBI is coming after Alabama and Auburn. I mean, Alabama and Auburn are two of many programs around the country. We've already seen the, you know, what's happened at Louisville with a lot more dollars and a big name historical coach like Rick Pitino being pushed out, and an AD that's that's lost a job already. So, you know, there's a lot of this is obviously all over the country, and you got to believe tip of the spear, right? I mean, this is now Nike is up next on a hit parade, and this is just beginning, don't you think?
I think so. I think the Nike side of this is we've only heard the tiniest bit of it, and you know, the FBI coming out this week and releasing what they released was essentially, I think, an attempt by them to get more people to come to them and start turning on other people that they know are involved mm-hmm. in this kind of thing. I think that they started with these four guys that they were able to kind of to nail down months ago. And you look at what happened with Alabama, for example, this case came out pretty early on. You know, this agent didn't even contact the Alabama assistant until last month.
And so
Alabama in some ways is fortunate that all of this comes out when this operation had not been going on for very long. It hadn't involved their assistant for very long, and so it didn't have an opportunity to become widespread in the way that it seems to have been with Chuck Person at Auburn. There are other programs that we're going to find out have been involved in this for months or even years, however long the FBI has been pursuing this case. So I think what this shows, the widespread nature of it, shows this is hitting on something that is part of the fundamental structure of how college basketball works right. in our country. It is very unappealing and very gross, and people don't want to see this stuff, and they're used to these kinds of scandals being isolated in college sports when they happen. This is not isolated, I think, is what we're going to come away from this all with. This goes to basically the fundamental nature of how college basketball has worked in America for a very long time. And anybody who's covered college basketball recruiting can tell you that this has kind of been the dirty secret of college sports. Is everybody knows that college basketball is a filthy business, and that so much about it and so much of how it works is unsavory. And I just think the NCAA has been, in part, has lacked the will to do anything about it, and in part has lacked the ability to do anything about it. And it took the FBI getting involved, I think, to show the scale of how this all works.
Yeah, and there's no question. And how about that eerie video of Rick Pitino speaking in 2014 about the need to get the shoe companies out of youth basketball and AAU, and how – you know, he can't recruit a Nike kid because they're an Adidas school, and all this crazy stuff that goes on. This is 2014. Now, Pitino certainly has enough different issues that he's had to deal with, and his involvement is going to, is obviously cost him his job and his most likely his legacy or his program's involvement. But that was pretty prophetic. I mean, you look back at that video from 3 years ago, and he's speaking directly to this problem that we got to get these shoe companies out of youth sports and out of the recruiting process. And that's one of the various things that we've seen happen here.
And I don't think he was, being disingenuous.
I agree.
I think that a lot of coaches will tell you when they get caught cheating, I had no choice. The only way I could successfully do my job is to do the same stuff everybody else was doing. So, as I said, it's become so ingrained in the nature of basketball here, the AAU system and its ties to the sneaker companies, and how that all ties together with talent agents, and how there are these other shady figures, these financial advisor type people. It's all just baked into how college basketball works now. There are no programs that don't have to touch on this in some respect or fashion. And if there are, I can promise you, they don't get They don't even sniff elite talent when it comes to the recruiting process. So it's gross. It's not fun. It's not a nice thing, and it's going to hurt college basketball in the short term. In the long run, if they're able to do real fundamental disruption to this system that has been in place for so long and root out these parties that don't need to be a part of the process, the sneaker companies, the AAU system, the AAU coaches, agents, if they can get those guys out of this process, college basketball will be so much better for it. That's a big task, and I don't even know if the FBI is going to be capable of doing it, but we'll see.
Well, they're certainly more capable of doing it than the NCAA is. That's been
Absolutely.
A joke, and I thought that Greg Sankey's comments were very, very well written regarding the FBI's ability to use their resources to clean up something like this and how he welcomed it. The part with Kobe Baker at Alabama that is just so maddening is the fact that he was the assistant director of enforcement at the NCAA, and that's the kind of stuff that gets picked up. We've had a Jim Rome commentary that's been running all day on our air and on other CBS stations across the country that is just Rome just laughing at the fact that the CBS or that the NCAA's director of enforcement and the guy who was, you know, dealing with violations of NCAA amateurism rules is the guy that got jammed at Alabama. I mean, that really is concerning.
Well, who would know better how it all works, right?
I guess.
The guy who has to monitor it all the time. The NCAA, listen, nobody should kid themselves into thinking the NCAA didn't know any of this was going on. You know, they may not have the ability to do anything about it. They certainly didn't have the will to do anything about it because the NCAA profits as much from these shoe companies that got involved in all of this as anybody. And we have to remember that the NCAA is not a governmental body. You know, they talk about being a nonprofit organization, but there's so much money funneling through there.
Right.
And they care about that money, and part of their job is to make sure that that money keeps coming in and getting distributed to their members. So this was a system that, yes, someone involved in the enforcement side of the NCAA ended up getting involved in the system. He was involved in the system when he was at the NCAA. That they understand how this all works. This was not a surprise to any of them. They're just going to have to deal with the fallout of it now.
Yeah. And, of course, then there's the dynamic of Bruce Pearl and Chuck Person. And I feel for Bruce Pearl on this because I don't believe that – I mean, I know that supposedly every coach knows everything that's going on in their program. And he made Chuck Person the assistant head coach in 2015 and so on. But I can't believe that Bruce Pearl would be so brazen to get involved in another thing when he almost had his entire career come crashing down when he was at UT over backyard barbecues, and that he got this amazing second chance to rebuild himself and reinvent himself, and Eddie would get caught up in something like this. But the reality is two things. One, I read that clause in his contract that talks about him, you know, being responsible for everybody in his program, regardless of what he knows about what's going on. And two, you can't find an article that deals with Chuck Person on any major website across the country that doesn't have that picture of Person in the background and Bruce Pearl in the foreground. And people just see coach, the scandal, whatever words that they see, and Bruce Pearl's pictures out there. That can't be good for him. To that be the picture that's being used by most people to show Chuck Person?
No, it's not good. I mean, I don't think the biggest problem for Bruce is the potential of him being connected to this case directly or having some kind of proof that he knew about it, because so far there isn't any proof that Bruce knew anything about it. I think the real problem is that whether he knew about it or not, he now has to deal with the consequences of what
right.
Chuck Person did. And unfortunately for him, it appears that from the FBI report that Chuck Person distributed some money to the players, to the families of two of the players on the team. And that would lead, now we don't know exactly what's going to come of that. That certainly, I would say, leads to heavy suspicion that, that two players on this Auburn basketball team are going to end up being ineligible to play for the team. That's not good. Coming into this season, this is a year that was supposed to be a big year for Bruce Pearl. Jay Jacobs said in the offseason they had high expectations for this season. They needed him to get something done. I would say Auburn is in as good a position as it's been for a while. I don't think they're in a good enough position that they can afford to lose two of their best players on the team before the season even starts. I think that's going to be a pretty tough blow for Auburn to have to absorb. And, you know, Bruce Pearl has to deal with that, whether it was his fault or not. So I think that is something that's going to impact him, even if the NCAA doesn't bring any additional heat onto the program.
And you wonder, would Alabama, I mean, based on everything that, you know, is in that we've been able to read so far, the assumption is that Colin Sexton is possibly the player that they're talking about, it, you know, coming out of Georgia, a five-star, you know, a kind of kid that Alabama doesn't get, you know. But there's just, you know, all of that was more about potential agent down the road type stuff. But I don't know. I mean, if all of this unfolds, doesn't it seem like Colin Sexton won't be available for Alabama either?
Well, based on what's in the report, that wouldn't seem to be the case. Of course, there's always the chance that there's more information out there that we don't know about yet.
Right.
The initial FBI report that was released does not have any scenes portrayed in it in which Colin Sexton or his father, who were at the meeting in Atlanta, got any money. It does not appear that the FBI has evidence of money being given to the Sextons at all. So that would probably bode well for Colin Sexton. I think there still probably would be some NCAA questions that have to be answered regarding that meeting and the contact that took place. But I wouldn't necessarily say that he's in as tough of a spot as the Auburn players that the FBI has evidence of receiving money. The big thing I think that Alabama would be most concerned about right now is just drawing additional NCAA attention. That's not something you want. You don't want an investigation on your campus, you know, in the middle of the season and when you're trying to continue to recruit and your program's just brought in its best recruiting class in history, possibly. I think Alabama is hoping to avoid, you know, severe NCAA scrutiny by doing this internal investigation up front and saying, here's our findings, here's what we found, and a staff member has been dismissed. We'll see. We'll see if the NCAA finds that satisfactory at this point. But I don't think, you know, unless there's additional information that comes out, and there certainly could be, it doesn't appear on the surface that Colin Sexton's eligibility is going to be in trouble at all. But again, this is so early in the process, and I think there's a lot more information that could end up coming out about lots of different sides of this for Alabama and Auburn.
Yeah, Matt Scalise with SAL.com. I'm waiting for the SEC shorts crew to do the, you know, when your secretary says the FBI is on line one, maybe too soon, right? I mean, maybe just too soon for that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
That'd be a good one.
I don't know. I don't know if they're gonna dabble in ongoing court cases at this point, but we'll see. Those guys always end up showing up Monday with something good, so we'll see what they have.
The FBI is on the line. But we'll just see where it all goes. Hey, if you don't laugh, you cry, right? We just spent 19 minutes. Football season. We got the two Mississippi schools in the state this weekend, and we just spent 19 minutes talking about a basketball scandal. But got to do it. I mean, you got to do it. And my listeners say probably some of the same things that your readers say. You know, I know you got to do it. I hate the story. You got to do it. They hate this. They hate kneeling before games in the NFL. They hate that we got to talk about this stuff. But what are we supposed to do? Just go along, mamby-pamby, and act like it's not happening? I mean, we got to handle this.
It's been a very eventful fall so far in the sports world. And you know, I think everybody would like it more if we could just focus on sports. But to be honest, I don't remember a year where we didn't have off field stuff. So this is what goes with the territory, man. Sports is life. And all the stuff that goes with life goes along with sports, and we're seeing a lot of that play out this fall.
By the way, I do want to say, too, that my good friend and colleague Cole Kublik's little fired up thing that I watched yesterday about, about the bulletin board material thing and how it, boy, if you need that to get you fired up and yada, yada, yada. I'm just going to say I'm calling BS on that because it does mean something to the kids. All right. I mean, anybody who watched that game knows that there was an additional focus. You call a bulletin board, call it what you want. But with all that yapping that Vanderbilt did during the week, these kids were going to put their foot on their throat and not let up till the very last minute. That comment by Nick Saban about, we won games, but we haven't really defeated somebody, to me is a direct result of that as well. And if it didn't mean anything to kids, they wouldn't be wearing different uniforms and they wouldn't be having belts on the sideline for turnovers and garbage cans and things like that. Obviously, all of that stuff adds to the motivation of these players, and they knew what was going on.
I think you can do it in a way that kids don't respond to, but I think Nick Saban knows what he's doing, and I think he did it well with his team going into that Vanderbilt game, and you can already see him doing it this week. He's talking about how the Ole Miss team, has sort of suggested that they've got Alabama's number, and how that's the ultimate disrespect is when somebody thinks they've got your number. You can already hear it. You can see how he lays the groundwork for his team to feel personally disrespected by every opponent where Nick Saban wants to give him a little bit of extra juice. He's a master motivator. I think among the many things that he is great at as a head coach, getting his guys convinced that nobody respects them, that nobody takes them seriously enough, that everybody's out to get them, even though they're the number one team in college football.
Yeah, right.
That is one of the most impressive, motivating jobs that I've seen him do. And I think last week was remarkable to see how all those Alabama players after the game couldn't stop talking about how Vanderbilt had disrespected them going into the game and how much they cared about beating Vanderbilt. I don't think you'll see anybody care as much about playing Vanderbilt this year as you saw Alabama care.
Yeah, but they don't pay attention to it, right? Yeah, I'm sure they don't. And let's say this about Ole Miss. Look, with no bowl game, this game and the Egg Bowl, that's their season. I mean, they got nothing to play for, in terms of postseason play, national TV audience, ESPN, all that kind of stuff. This has got to be huge. I mean, Alabama doesn't get anybody coming in that's not looking to make a name for themselves.
No question, Ole Miss will be motivated, and this is a game that could make their season, could make it all worth it, and I think it would make them feel like their program is not off track, and that they're still who they believed they were. They're still the program that a lot of these kids signed up to be a part of when they were recruited to Ole Miss. I think the big problem, unfortunately, for them is that they already kind of face. I think some talent deficiencies coming into this season. I think they're missing some of the key, elite talent at some of the key positions on the field that they've had the last few years. And on top of it, I think they've had a big downgrade when it comes to coaching. I think Matt Luke just isn't the same level of coach that Hugh Freeze was. And I don't know that he's going to be able to keep Nick Saban on his heels the way that Hugh Freeze was able to do for the last 3 years. So, look, Ole Miss is a dangerous team because they sling it all over the field. They're going to attack Alabama's secondary, which I think might still be a little bit of a vulnerability at this point. They're not going to make it easy on Alabama. They're not going to just run the ball right into Alabama's jaws the way that Vanderbilt tried to. They're not going to play into Alabama's strengths. But I still just don't think that the play calling and the overall talent level is there to give Alabama the same kind of challenge that they have the last 3 years.
Matt Scalise has been our guest, AL.com. Matt, I've refreshed twice since we've been talking. So I just keep refreshing. I'll keep adding up the hits at AL.com, waiting for the next shoe to drop. No pun intended. in this whole story with the basketball deal. So I know you guys are going to be very busy over the next week or so.
Absolutely, and for those who still find themselves kind of confused about all of this and what it means for Alabama and Auburn, Kevin Skarbinski sat down with us and did two videos that you can find on our site and on our YouTube channels. Just kind of very basic, breaks it all down, doesn't overcomplicate it, so you can get a good handle on what all is going on with this crazy basketball situation. So I'd highly recommend everybody go check that out.
All right, so there you go. Matt, appreciate you, man. We'll do it again.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Matt Scalise. I don't have the heart to tell him I'm at the AL.com site, and I just pumped it up again, and you're getting that thing, that gray screen, you know, with the little TV-looking thing with the two dots in it that make it look like something's broken. So I don't know if they got to maybe deal with that at the video department there. All right, when we come back, Russ Mitchell is up next. He'll join us right here on the Tom Abraham Show. He is the senior SEC writer for College Football News, which means we're going to talk football. We'll do that next right after this on 730-1039. The Hump. Another great Guns N' Roses song on a Throwback Thursday. It's all GNR today. All right, joining us now, a guy does a tremendous job. College Football News, SEC senior writer, our good friend Russ Mitchell. And he joins us on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Russ, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
Kicking the tires, lighting the fires, baby.
Now, I hear you, brother. All right. I'm going to be in Knoxville for CBS Sports Radio for the Georgia-Tennessee game, and I'm trying to come up with my narrative, you know, for the Open. You got to have a little narrative for the Open. So help me out here. How do I position this game to where, you know, Georgia's not going to just boat race them by pounding the ball down UT's throat and run the ball for 350 yards? Give me a little something that I can put in my my Open.
I got nothing.
You got nothing, right? I got nothing either. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I got nothing. How do I position this game?
Okay. This is why you come to me. This is why your listeners come to collegefootballnews.com. So here's the one nugget, right?
Give me a nugget.
The key player in this game for Tennessee is Trevor Daniel. And if you're driving around saying, who? You're forgiven. That's the punter for Tennessee. Yeah. He's averaging about 45 yards a kick. And I know it sounds silly, but if Tennessee's going to have any chance of winning this game, they've got to push Georgia back. If Trevor Daniel does not have the game of his life, if he's not averaging 50 yards a punt or more – and pushing Georgia back and trying to maintain some, you know, field position in this game, Tennessee's going to have a really hard night, really hard day.
It just seems to be that, you know, this is a, you know, styles make a fight type of game, and Georgia's got a desire to pound the ball and then go play action down the field. I just don't know how Tennessee all of a sudden has some sort of lobotomy, whether or not Tennessee starts or Georgia starts in the Tennessee River, or whether they start at the 50-yard line or the 5-yard line. It seems to be that Georgia will be able to run the ball almost at will here if they're who we think they are.
I mean, I think they only need to score 3 points.
Yeah.
I think there's a legitimate chance that this Georgia defense might be able to shut out Tennessee. You know, and by the way, Tennessee's got a great running back in John Foley. I love that kid. Love that kid. Love the way he runs. Powerful, strong runner. Too bad he doesn't play for some other team besides Tennessee because he's being wasted. And this Georgia secondary, Nick Fitzgerald only threw for 83 yards last week, you know, and with two interceptions. And more to the point, they're like Johnny on the spot, baby. They're like, I would love to know, I should look this up, what Mississippi State's yards after catch were, but I'll bet it was like the lowest in all of college football last week.
So we're starting to get our arms around things as the narrative grows now that we see more league games. And, you know, a lot of people, me included, feel like Georgia has now emerged as the number two team in this conference. I thought Mississippi State, you know, obviously the Mississippi State-Georgia game was going to go a long ways towards helping to determine that narrative. Now Mississippi State goes to Auburn, which looks like all of a sudden maybe they're starting to find their groove, but it's Missouri. They've only given up one sack in each of the last 2 weeks, but Mercer in Missouri, this is a different kind of defense in Mississippi State, and State comes in there like an 8 or 9 point underdog. Even Cole Kublik, who was all over Auburn and played there, said that he was shocked that the number was that high. So what do you think about Auburn and State?
You know, this is a bad – State's a good team, man. You know, I know they just got undressed between the hedges, but a lot of their teams have been undressed in Athens. So this is a good team. The problem is that this defense is, you know, this Auburn defense is on par with Georgia's defense. And, you know, they held Georgia Southern's option attack went nowhere. Against Clemson, remember, on the road, Auburn held – Clemson to only 10 rushing yards in the first half. Clemson ran for only 96. Mizzou got a little over 100, but, you know, that was garbage time. And the problem for Mississippi State is that the running game makes the passing game, not the other way around. And we saw that, lad. They couldn't run the ball. Fitzgerald in particular likes to run. And if they can't run, Fitzgerald and Williams, then they can't get the passing game going. And unfortunately for the Bulldogs, I think that's what they'll see on the Plains. I don't think they'll be able to run the ball. So I like Auburn.
Could it be a closer game, though, than what you know what most people think?
You know, I think this is a good Mississippi State team. But, brother, it's all about matchups, right? That's why we said Alabama would run literally all over Vandy, although no one saw it. 52 points midway through the third quarter.
Right.
And, you know, it's why we thought Alabama would beat Florida State. Bad matchups. It's why we thought South Carolina had a chance against a good North Carolina State team. And ultimately, it's why I don't think Mississippi State matches up well against Auburn on the Plains.
Yeah. Does Ole Miss have any kind of a threat for Alabama? I mean, that's four touchdowns. I mean, these are league games here, and these lines are like you think they're playing a Conference USA team or something. But the State come in there with a mobile quarterback off a off week. Alabama coming off a 59-0 win and feeling pretty good about themselves. The State does Ole Miss have anything to at least threaten Alabama?
Well, so let's look at what Ole Miss does have, right? First of all, Ole Miss has got a passing offense, right? I mean, they can actually throw the ball. They do it fairly well, and their run defense. Better than Vandy's run defense. So in terms of being able to stop the strength of Alabama, they're rushing, and in terms of being able to throw the ball and put up some points, you know, and let's not forget, Bama is – it's not like Bama's going to put a lot of pressure on Shea. You know, they're second to last in sacks, Alabama, and they're 12th in tackles for loss. So it's not really a defense that – plays on the other side of the field. So 28 points seems like an awful lot of points. You know, I mean, Alabama's going to win this game, but I wouldn't shock me at all if Ole Miss scores 14 or 15 points, which means Alabama'd have to be in. They could. In terms of handling Alabama's strengths, I think matches up better against Bama than Vandy did.
Yeah. Russ Mitchell with us here from easy for me to say from College Football News. Another game that's kind of interesting, kind of one of these games that will help us determine the middle of the pack in the league is this one that'll be played between Texas A&M and South Carolina as Kevin Sumlin continues his tour to try and save his gig before he gets whacked by Alabama and Auburn and maybe at Florida and. And it all falls apart for him. But does Will Muschamp advance the cause there, or will A&M get another win? They look pretty impressive offensively against Arkansas.
Everybody looks impressive offensively against Arkansas, man.
And that's a whole other story.
I, this again remains. So, by the way, for everyone wondering, Jake's hurt. That's where Mond is starting. That's why they got the freshman playing there.
Right.
And, you know, he was fairly average against Arkansas. Not that bad, actually. I think he threw for a little under 50%, had a decent quarterback rating and some touchdowns. The problem is South Carolina can't run the ball. And when you start getting to SEC competition, if you're one-dimensional, that's a big problem. And so going on the road, if this game was being played in South Carolina, I think that they'd have a little bit more of a shot. But I expect, you know, they jump-started their offense last week against Arkansas. I expect that to keep going at home. I'm not impressed at all. I'm not sold on Texas A&M at all. But I think they'll slip up to 4-1.
Okay. And speaking of quarterbacks, I mean, Florida, right? I guess if you got three, you don't have one. Right, the old deals, if you got two, you don't have one. If you got three, you don't have one. Luke Del Rio, I mean, this guy here, he's going to retire and graduate at the same time. He just keeps bouncing back. But, I mean, you know, Felipe Franks doesn't leave him any options, I think, here. They got to go with Del Rio. And you know, as long as the SEC East is still in play, you know, this is probably the right move for Florida, no?
Again, this is a, unlike last week, which was a bad matchup for Vandy's defense, Florida is a good matchup for Vandy's defense. They don't run the ball. They're, like, down at the bottom of the pile, 11th in the conference in rushing. You know, and for Vandy, getting out of Nashville is probably a good thing after what Alabama did to them last week. So, you know, just clean slate, get on a plane, go down to Gainesville. And this is a decent matchup for Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. I will say, Tom, that I think this is a great move to put Del Rio in.
Yeah.
If you're concerned about winning this year, Del Rio's the guy because he's experienced. He's been with McElwain, you know, all the way back, right, to right. Alabama. So, you know, and he understands the offense. He's not going to get rattled. And then you can just let what is a very good Florida defense play. And, you know, I will point out, do you realize Alabama doesn't have a single offensive turnover yet?
Yeah, that's right. They have not turned the ball over yet. They're not getting the takeaways that they did last year as many, but they're starting to come. They're certainly not getting the pick sixes and all the non-offensive touchdowns, the NOTs, but they're not turning the ball over at all, which is really something to be said for Jalen Hurts in his sophomore year.
Yeah, and I say that because you should get the same thing from Del Rio, you know. I must say, just to switch gears, I'm really impressed with Hurts. I know, you know, he's 13th in the conference in terms of passing yards, but again, he plays for Alabama. You don't have to throw the ball up, you know.
Right.
And in terms of making the right decisions, I said this last week, but when he's on the field, he just looks like he knows when he's supposed to run and when he's not supposed to run. He makes decisions far more quickly. I think his maturation has been excellent. And, you know, if Alabama can continue with, you know, an elite defense and an offense that doesn't turn over the ball, you know, Lord help you with three big NFL running backs.
Yeah. The funny thing continues to be, though, that other kid came in, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, and, man, does he spin it nice. He gets rid of that ball so quick, and I just don't know what they're going to do over the next 2 years. What are they going to do?
I know what they're going to do. They're going to bench Tua and play Jalen Hurts. If you're undefeated, if you're basically winning almost every single game you play.
That's now. But what do you do next year and the year after that? This kid is not going anywhere. He's not going to the NFL, Jalen Hurts, after his second or after his third year. He's probably going to do the Deshaun Watson thing, stay for the whole 4 years, and Tua's going to sit around burning shirt after shirt when that kid looks like a kid that's got to play. I mean, he's cool with it now. But is he really going to be cool with it when he's a junior and he's still backing up Jalen Hurts? Yeah.
3 years from now. And by the way, you definitely play Jalen. I'm sorry that if he's got the experience, there's something to be said for seeing it, you know, having seen it. And that's an intangible that people won't have. Can you trade him?
I don't know what happens. I mean, maybe if they were trailing by two touchdowns in a game, I mean, I don't know how that happens, but let's say they were trailing or two or you know, 17 points or something like that. I don't know. Maybe at that point you would run that kid out there. I don't know.
Everybody just take a deep breath, right? The most popular person on the team is the backup quarterback. He's a freshman. Very, very rarely do you get a kid playing as well as Galen played last year or Fromm is playing for Georgia this year. You know, I'd give me a sophomore over a freshman any day of the week.
Yeah. No, I'm not even suggesting that they would make any kind of a change. I'm just wondering how that kid or how that goes in a year or two from now when the clock is ticking and, you know, because he looks like the real deal. I mean, it's just that's just the way that thing looks. But
First of all, all you need is 1 year. You know, that's all you need, especially at a school like Alabama. If he gets 1 year as a 22-year-old and he lights it up, he'll go to the NFL in the first round. So all you need is 1 year. And talking about quarterbacks, freshman quarterbacks, there's a big push in Baton Rouge right now to play their freshman quarterback. Have you seen that kid?
Yeah.
6'5", like 190.
Yeah.
If the wind blows fast, it might knock Miles over. So hopefully they feed that kid and keep him on the bench for a year.
That's a good point. All right, Russ Mitchell. Why can't I say your name today? I'm going to call you Rush for some reason. I don't know, but Russ Mitchell has been our guest, always doing a great job, college football news as well. Thanks, Russ.
Take care, brother.
All right, thank you. Let's get a break. Come back with an update right after this. Can I say Tony Mack? I could say Tony. I can't say Russ Mitchell today. I'm trying to talk too fast, maybe. I don't know. Tony Mack's up with an update right after this on 730-1039. The ump. Next year and the year after that, this kid is not going anywhere. He's not going to the NFL, Jalen Hurts, after his second or after his third year. He's probably going to do the Deshaun Watson thing, stay for the whole 4 years, and Tua's going to sit around burning shirt after shirt when that kid looks like a kid that's got to play. I mean, he's cool with it now, but is he really going to be cool with it when he's a junior and he's still backing up Jalen Hurts? Yeah.
3 years from now. And by the way, he definitely played Jalen. I'm sorry that if he's got the experience, there's something to be said for seeing it, you know, having seen it. And that's an intangible that people won't have. Can you trade him?
I don't know what happens. I mean, maybe if they were trailing by two touchdowns in a game, I mean, I don't know how that happens, but let's say they were trailing or two or, you know, 17 points or something like that. I don't know. Maybe at that point, You would run that kid out there? I don't know.
Everybody just take a deep breath, right? The most popular person on the team is the backup quarterback. He's a freshman. Very, very rarely do you get a kid playing as well as Galen played last year or Fromm is playing for Georgia this year. You know, I'd give me a sophomore over a freshman any day of the week.
Yeah. No, I'm not even suggesting that they would make any kind of a change. I'm just wondering how that kid or how that goes in a year or two from now when the clock is ticking and, you know, because he looks like the real deal. I mean, it's just that's just the way that thing looks. But
First of all, all you need is 1 year. You know, that's all you need, especially at a school like Alabama. If he gets 1 year as a 22-year-old and he lights it up, he'll go to the NFL in the first round. So all you need is 1 year. And talking about quarterbacks, freshman quarterbacks, there's a big push in Baton Rouge right now to play their freshman quarterback. Have you seen that kid?
Yeah.
6'5", like 190.
Yeah.
If the wind blows fast, it might knock Miles over. So hopefully they feed that kid and keep him on the bench for a year.
That's a good point. All right, Russ Mitchell. Why can't I say your name today? I'm going to call you Rush for some reason. I don't know, but Russ Mitchell has been our guest, always doing a great job, college football news as well. Thanks, Russ.
Take care, brother.
All right, thank you. Let's get a break. Come back with an update right after this. Can I say Tony Mack? I could say Tony. I can't say Russ Mitchell today. I'm trying to talk too fast, maybe. I don't know. Tony Mack's up with an update right after this on 730-1039 with the ump. Yeah. Let's get an update with T-Mac. It's time for that Doghouse Sports Report.
Coach number two mentioned in federal court documents has been identified as Rick Pitino. That's right. The guy who claimed he knew nothing about the allegations? Yeah, it was him. Coach 2 is referenced in the documents 9 times, including when sports agent Christian Dawkins was quoted by saying he had spoken with Coach 2 about getting additional money for players 10's family. And that he'd told Coach 2 he needed to call Jim Gatto, who's the head of everything at Adidas. Player 10 has been identified as well as Brian Bowen, a 5-star commit whose family was funneled $100,000 to ensure that he went to Louisville. And continuing on with that investigation, Nike's Elite Youth Basketball League has been served with a subpoena by federal investigators. The league hasn't been named in the case, but Merle Code, who is a former employee that ran pretty much everything, is alleged to be involved in helping to conspire paying players' families to ensure they went to a college sponsored by Adidas and would most likely sign a contract with the company once they went professional. I'm Tony Mack. That is your Doghouse Sports Report.
All right, coming up next, it's the highly sought after Fabulous Final Hour. Phone lines will be open. You ready to jump in? 866-485-9867 is that number. Text window 732-982-7469. We're interacting right after this, right here on 730-1039, the UMP.